Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Lemon Snail podcast with me, Gary Jones. Now I hope you've all had a fantastic week and I've got a brilliant interview lined up for you today. Now I am joined by a guy who I've known for a couple of years called James Justice and he runs Justice Roach Limited. Now they provide a whole manner of services which we'll go into in the podcast, but in this two-part interview plus a podcast extra, we talk about his background, we talk about how he's got into it and how he's changed his services over time, and also how to keep customers. There's loads of golden nuggets in this one, and I really enjoyed talking to James and finding out a little bit more. So let's get cracking with part one of this two-part plus a podcast extra. Let's take it away. So for today's interview, we're going to be talking to James and Gary, who I think Gary's just going to be sipping his coffee in the background, just maybe referring to a few questions. Is that about right?
That's about right. Yep.
Love it. So James, let's talk to you for a little bit about your background, your history,
and
about your profession. Is that right?
Yep, no problem at all.
Lovely. So if you just like to introduce yourself and your company name and what you're doing at the moment.
Okay, no problem. Well, my name's James Justice and the name of my company is Justice Roach Limited. I'm married to Jane. I live in Warwick. Stepson Oliver. I've got two cats. There's three of us in the business. There's myself, Jodie and Kevin. That's a little bit about,
Cool. And what does your business do? How does it help people?
Yeah, well, basically, we're, the old term used to be new media developers, but basically we develop bespoke websites with content management systems, client resource management systems, web-based systems of that nature, and we're also developing more and more apps now, native apps, for iPhone and for Android. So that's going quite well for us now.
Cool. And how long has it been going?
Well, the business, I set up the business in 1998.
Okay.
So we've actually been trading now for over 18 years. I set the business up initially in Evesham. It was just me at the time in 1998. Then I took on Jodie and Kevin. Traded in Evesham for about 7 or 8 years. Then we moved to Wixford Park, which is Bidford-on-Avon Way. Traded there for 7 or 8 years. And we've recently relocated the business to Pure Offices. That's our business address in Leamington Spa. But we actually all generally tend to work from home now.
I suppose the beauty of what you're doing, you can work from anywhere.
We work from home. We've got VoIP phones that if it rings me and I'm not there, it rings over to Evesham, which is where Jodie is. Or if he's not there, it goes over to Cheltenham, to Kevin. Yeah. So we try to make use of all the IT as much as possible. It works very well for us like this. We've sort of done it in reverse, really. Rather than having a small setup and going big, we've had the offices, we've done all that, and we've sort of tried to fine-tune it now to the more modern technologies.
Well, this is the bit that interests me, because when people think of a traditional startup, they think of a small someone in their bedroom or in their office
and then
building outwards. But when we spoke ages ago about your history and how you did, you did it in reverse.
Yeah,
and that was quite interesting for me.
It is. And I mean, I think what it is in the early days, we were looking to get some big clients on board, and we've got some quite large clients, and we do work for Ariston. I mean, they're quite a big setup. And I think going back in the early days, back into sort of 2000, 2002, around those sort of times, companies of that nature would expect you to have an office and to have a meeting room and a boardroom and
that
all that.
That was the expectation.
Yeah, but I think that's very much changed now. I think a lot of, even large companies are starting to sort of subcontract work out to companies that are more sort of lean and mean, still provide a very good service.
Yep.
So having had, having had the larger offices and the setup years ago to actually attract some of the larger clients, we've actually kept those clients. We're obviously picking up more clients as time passes as well. And to be quite honest, a lot of clients actually thought we were doing that anyway. So now I've explained to them our setup, they're very happy with it, and it hasn't affected our business adversely at all. In fact, I think it's increased it.
I can imagine it's probably increased it. You're probably more comfortable. There's less travelling.
That's the big thing, the travelling. I mean, that's saving so much time now. I mean, 30 miles a day, which isn't ridiculous, I was doing, but it's the time. I get up now, straight into the office, working for 8:30 through to 5, out for meetings as needed. And I'm just a lot more efficient with the time, and my colleagues find the same as well.
And obviously you give
probably not a better customer service, but you are more, you could be more responsive in a situation.
Certainly, yeah, yeah, certainly, yeah, yeah. Sweet.
So, what did you do before setting up the business?
Okay, yeah. Well, when I left school, some time ago now.
It was only 19 years ago, sure.
Yeah, not that long ago. Yeah, my sort of background's in science, really. So okay. I did all my sort of qualifications, and I did ONC and HND in applied biology. But I've always, from a very young lad, been very interested in computers and technology, video games, photography and sound and music. Music's been a very large part of my interests over time. I played in bands and enjoy sort of making electronic music and rock music in my little recording studio I've got at home, which is good. So, yeah, when I left school, I initially worked in a laboratory in Wellesbourne for a year or so, and then I moved on to work at what was known as the National Vegetable Research Station, which is on the Warwick Road, I believe, Wellesbourne Way. Mm-hmm. And my first position there was an assistant scientific officer working in plant breeding and genetics.
Oh, wow.
So
That's different.
That's right. So my job was actually breeding, an onion breeding program, trying to sort of create better onions for people, for the farmers basically, to grow.
Oh, wow.
We also did work on leeks as well, so it was crossing different onion strains together to try and get better, more resistant varieties.
Yeah. And was that quite commonplace back then, or was it kind of cutting edge at that point?
Yeah, I suppose a lot of what the research station was doing was quite cutting edge. I mean, I wasn't going right down into the molecular level or anything like that.
No.
It was a bit more hands on with the plant breeding side. Mm-hmm. It was literally sort of crossing the plants together, pollinating them, and then sowing the seeds, seeing how they looked, seeing if they were better as far as yielding better onions and things like that. So I did that for a couple of years at HRI, and then a position came up at the research station as a scientific officer in electron microscopy, and that was that was again a service for the station. It was all related to, the work I did at the station was all related around plants and studies of viruses and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So my job was to actually run the electron microscopes with my colleague for the research station, studying plant viruses. And also a lot of work on the entomology side, which is the study of insects, was also undertaken at HRI.
Okay.
And we used to use scanning electron microscopes to look at insects and study them. And so my job really was running that as a service with my colleague for the station. So I did that again for a few more years, which was enabled me to sort of move up a notch in my sort of promotion. And then an opportunity came along for me to work in the visual communications department of the research station, because at the time people had realised my interests in multimedia, and they asked if I could actually develop multimedia as a format for scientists to use.
Linking the two together.
As a research.
Yeah.
So a lot of scientists, when they've done studies, they'll go out and present a paper at an annual sort of review or at a show. So my job was to try and put together work on the multimedia side to allow them to actually present their findings in a more interesting way. For example, simple things like animated graphs and incorporating video into some of their research papers as well, and then putting it onto CD so they could actually leave copies with people afterwards. So that became my final sort of stint at HRI, which I did until about 1998. And then after that, at home, I was also building up multimedia skills and off my own back as well.
Yeah.
And an opportunity came along to develop an interactive CD-ROM for a large water control company in Evesham.
Okay.
Where I was living at the time. So I took that on board, knowing that I would have to actually give up my full-time job to give me the time to do that.
Yep.
So that was my leap of faith, really, to do that. So I decided to leave HRI after many happy years and set up on my own. And that was the stepping stone for me to set up Justice Roach in 1998.
Brilliant. And was that a kind of a tricky decision, or was it a case of a black and white decision, thinking, right, I'm going to do it?
I took a bit of thinking about, because obviously being married, had a mortgage, commitments. I didn't take the decision lightly, but
no.
I felt ready, and I think always in my mind I always felt I was going to do something for myself. It was just when the time was right, and that opportunity came along.
fair enough, because I know some business owners or some people who are in employment and are doing things on the side or doing things which they love, they want to do more of what they're passionate about, and sometimes that can be quite hard to kind of leap across, like
yes.
you said.
Yes, that's right.
So
that's
you thought about it a little while.
Yeah, I gave it a few years to sort of just make sure, you know, and I built up my skills at home to make sure I was fairly up to speed with the sort of things I might be asked to do if I was to set up on my own. And having that initial springboard job was good, because that was a large job that kept me sort of busy for quite some months, but I knew at that time then I did need to start looking to bring other things into the sales funnel as well, which I managed to do sort of from the local business, and I sort of built it up from there.
Brilliant. So how long after you kind of set up and got that large job did you start taking on people to and form as it is now?
Yeah, well, I set up on my own in 1998. I had a little office in Evesham, and it was about 2000 when I decided I needed some extra assistance.
So quite early on.
Fairly early on, yeah. So I took on Jody, and he's still with me now, as is Kevin, and he became my sort of main web developer, really. So he's very up with the web development side of things and heavily into the coding. And he's been great. And as I say, he's been with me for 18 years now. Well, no, probably, no, sorry, that's about 16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, now. So, I'm going strong.
Oh, wow, cool. And then at that point as well, you were growing your business. Again, we can have people who have just started their businesses listening in.
Yes.
What kind of, have you got any kind of top tips? Not your main golden nugget that we discussed earlier, have you got any kind of top tips anyway for them to grow their business at that stage? So imagine you're back there.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, I mean, obviously back then, social media wasn't such a big thing. I mean, the internet was just kicking in. So I was generally using the more sort of, I'll call it old fashioned ways of marketing. I was actually creating things on CD-ROM and sending them out to companies.
Okay.
I was going through directories to find addresses that I could target. If we'd done a certain job for a certain client, I'd often target similar clients using the examples of the jobs we'd done to try and allow what we'd done to relate to them, because a lot of the work is very bespoke in what we do, and what we do for one customer, it would be something that another customer would never even need in a month of Sundays. So, for example, we've done quite a lot of work in the past over the years doing attraction websites for companies like, well, we do the Stratford Butterfly Farm, and we've done Cotswold Wildlife Park and Cotswold Farm Park. And again, I've used that for examples to actually contact other attractions to try and get them interested, which has been successful.
I know a lot of business coaches will say that once, if you get stuck in a rut in terms of your business, you need to look at your customer base at the moment, find who your most common customer is or most common denominator is, and target those. So that's pretty much exactly what you did, but you identified it right early on.
That's right. And I mean, I must admit, I do, a lot of the customers I've got now are customers that I've had for ever since I've sort of set up, really. So I think there's a lot to be said for keeping the customers you've got happy, keeping them informed. I don't think there's any harm from time to time dropping them an email when you found out, you perhaps found out it's a technology that they might be interested in, just to see if they might be interested themselves. Because it's surprising, because they've got their business they're running, and they've got their heads concentrated on what they're doing. They're not always aware of other things that are going on which might be useful to them.
No, they're inside the business.
That's right, exactly, yeah.
Oh, sweet. Well, we're going to cut it there for part one. Okay. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the industry, how it's developed over time, and what your modern day work is now, and what your golden nugget is.
Okay. All right. No problem.
Cool. If you did want to get on the podcast, all you need to do is contact me through Twitter, search me at Leamington Hour, all one word, and then you'll be able to find us, connect with us. You can check me on LinkedIn and Facebook as well as Gary Jones, but mainly let me know about your story, let me know about your business or event, and we'll get it sorted. But I would love to have you on the show, and I would love to hear, promote and connect you with other business owners and help you promote your business or service. So let's rejoin James and myself with part two of this brilliant interview. We're back out for part two with James, and now we left part one talking about the kind of the evolution of your brand up until a certain point.
Yeah.
So let's carry on. So when you first started to compete to now, how has your kind of marketplace changed? Because I can imagine it's been massively
easy. Yeah, I mean, our market change has changed hugely over the years, as you might think. I mean, 18 years down the line, I mean, back in 1998, 2000, we were, interactive CD-ROMs were quite a large part of what we were developing. So yep. It was developing electronic presentations for customers to use at trade shows to present on large screens, and also to send off in the post electronic presentations. But it probably got into about 2002-03 when we started doing more and more on the website development side. I mean, in the early days, we were talking about doing static websites, very basic websites. But we soon realised that we needed to be able to offer more than that. So we started looking more and more into creating content management systems that actually live behind a website. And that basically means that you can actually upkeep content on the website yourself through a content management system.
Gotcha.
So, and there's plenty of those you can buy off the shelf, but we've actually developed our own over the years. And we are very bespoke developers. So it means that when we developed a website and we've developed a back-end system for you using our own solution that we've developed, we can add lots of features to it that you perhaps couldn't do with an off-the-shelf solution.
Can you kind of give an example so we can kind of...
Yeah, I mean, quite a lot of our customers like to be able to interface their website into perhaps a database that they've got to pull content in real time from a database, so we can build features into the back end system to actually pull data from different databases into the website. And there might be some very bespoke features that a customer would like in the back end system, in a certain way that products have to display that you couldn't do with a generic off-the-shelf solution, but we can modify totally to the customer's needs with our bespoke solution.
So it's literally a tailored.
Yeah, it is. We've always said we like to be thought of as quality developers. We're certainly not the cheapest developer. We like to think that our price is realistic, taking in mind that we're quality developers. And that's how we like to market ourselves. So we're not looking really at doing little single one-page, two-page websites.
No.
Not that there's many of those this day and age that come along. It's more the large sort of corporate website development, e-commerce website development that we tend to get involved with on our website side. The growing side for us, again, which, thinking back to what you originally said, how things have changed, is the app development now. Apps, which are basically applications, bits of software, which now you can happily run on your phone, on your tablet. We're starting to develop more and more of those for customers now. And quite a lot of the apps we've developed to date have been used for internal use. So a customer might want an app to actually use as a system for doing stock taking or something like that. So they can actually do it on their phone. They can scan a barcode. And then they can use the app that we've developed for them that then takes that data and feeds it into perhaps their, maybe they've got a SAP database or something like that they want it to feed into. So we'll develop a bespoke app, but we've also developed apps that you can actually obtain from the App Store. We've just literally yesterday launched an app for Londis. It's a loyalty app for them, which you will find on the Apple Store if you Google Londis Me on Veil, because it's the Me on Veil Londis that are using it. And basically it means you can download the app for free, go into Londis, buy a coffee, scan the barcode that they give you to give you some points, and once you've got 10 points you can get a free coffee. So loyalty apps are going to be quite an important thing for customers to have. So that's one side of things that we're getting into now.
Do you think going forward, and it's a question we haven't prepared for, so it'd be interesting to see your answer, but going forward, is that the future of where your industry is going to go, or do you think that's going to change again?
I think there'd be some changes, but I don't think the changes are going to be quite as drastic as they have been over the last 10 years or so. I mean, I think there's always going to be a need for websites. I think more and more will actually happen through apps now and through app technology, whether it be on your mobile device, on your phone, on your tablets. I mean, obviously, we'll soon be moving into more virtual reality type solutions. But again, app technology would interface into those. Thinking about Google Glasses and all the sort of things that are coming along now. So technology will change, but I think it's going to be a more of a stable evolution now.
Yeah, so it's not going to be any kind of big jump.
I can't see it, but no. Who knows?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
No, they don't.
Okay, so that's cool. So in terms of your current customers, you were mentioning you've been doing quite a lot of work on apps.
Yes.
With your marketplace as it is there any kind of misconceptions or any kind of pitfalls people need to avoid?
Yeah, I think on the misconception side, apps aren't as costly as you might think to develop now. I mean, they're actually quite, an app can be developed for a reasonable cost now. Mm. So I think the days of like tens of thousands of pounds to develop an app, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are apps that will cost that to develop,
yeah,
and more, but for a simpler app, you are looking at a price now that smaller companies could find affordable.
So potentially, if you're a smaller company, an app could be an additional benefit you could be looking
certainly
into.
Yeah. I mean, an app, you don't really want to have an app for the sake of having an app. You want an app to do something positive and to do something that's going to hopefully save you time. I mean, the loyalty apps is a good road to go down as a possibility. So it's worth keeping that in mind on the app side. Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. So maybe small companies start to think about the next stage. They've got the website.
How it might assist them. And as I say, it doesn't have to be an app that you get off the app store. It could be an app that's just developed for you that you use internally as an internal solution to something you want to achieve within the business.
See, I've never thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense. If you develop something that would help in terms of a process, actually, that would be so much easier going
forward. We've actually developed more of those than we have actual apps that are available for public download, to be honest.
And I suppose they're the kind of apps you don't hear about.
No, that's right, because they're not any use to anybody other than the business, basically, for the internal job it's designed for.
It's interesting. Yeah. That's a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
So going forward, in terms of your markets, in terms of the apps, in terms of yourself as well, what's next for you in terms of your business and yourself?
Yeah, well, assuming I can keep going, because I'm 50 years old now. I know I don't look it, but
I was going to say no, and Gary's shaking his head going, no.
No, I think we're going to continue on as we are.
Yeah.
I've got no, we're happy at the size we are. I mean, we've been this size for many years.
Yeah.
We've got a good client base, and I'd like to keep getting new customers in, keep the sales funnel as full as possible. I think there's a lot of opportunities still out there, certainly on the app development side, but also on the website side. I think that people are realizing that there's a lot that you can actually do with interfacing into external databases and in internal systems and using web technology for that. It's still going to be something that people are going to want to do for hopefully some years to come.
True. In terms of kind of growing, keeping your business the same size and customer retention, you touched upon that earlier on in the first part about customer retention. And I love that point that you've had some customers since you started.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, certainly.
It's probably a secret that many people would love to know.
So
have you got any kind of top tips around that?
Yeah, I mean, I think as I sort of briefly touched on, keeping your clients that you've got, keeping them in touch with what you're doing, advising them, keeping them up to date with new technologies. I mean, not trying to look as if you're trying to sell to them, actually. No. You know, I mean, because you're trying to help them, basically. I mean, that's what we try to do. We try to help people to actually grow their business. I mean, one very successful company that we've built up over the years, or companies been built up based on the websites we've developed, is a guy that sells wiper blades online.
Okay.
We've built him over the years quite a number of websites, and each website has grown. It's got more and more functionality, he's been with us for 7 or 8 years now, if not longer than that.
So
I mean, it's surprising how you know, if you keep going back to your customers and telling them about what you're doing, they might not come back to you straight away, but it just allows them to sort of think about things, and then your name's in their mind when they come across something they might need doing.
Well, that's it. They might not be ready at that particular time.
That's right.
But
yeah,
it's being around and being there.
Yeah, and it's just perhaps every 2 or 3 months sending a little email just to say hello and reminding them of your services. I think that's not unreasonable to do in this day and age.
Not at all. I think we all I think it's socially accepted
to actually
do that.
Certainly.
Now.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of kind of growing your business and attracting new customers, I know we met at Limited Business Network years ago.
Probably
a couple of years now.
Yeah, a few years.
And you're one of the members of my network as well, Limited Hour Network. Has networking played a big part in it, or is it kind of just complemented what you've already been doing?
Yeah, I would say that the majority of our work we get is through mouth to mouth. We don't really do any advertising, to be quite honest. Not majorly now. We don't do lots and lots of mail shots and things like that. We never have majorly. Most of it is, as I say, word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that I achieve through going to network meetings. I mean, as you mentioned, the Leamington Business Network, the LBN, which has been really good. I've been a member of that for probably getting on for 3 years now.
Okay.
It's been really useful, not just for potential business, also because of the nature of how we work. We tend to work on our own quite a lot of the time, even though we are on the phone to each other most days. And it's sometimes good to go out and mix with people out of, you know, in a network environment, to actually just find out what's going on in the world.
You
can get a bit insular if you're not careful, and you start thinking, am I doing this right, am I doing that right? But it's nice sometimes just to drop a few ideas through people, seeing what they're doing, and realise, well, actually what I'm doing isn't so bad, actually. I'm doing all right. So I think from a social side, it can be quite useful as well. Very useful.
Yeah, I find that it's quite interesting talking to other people who do radio interviews, people who do social media. Actually, the issues that we face in social media, it's exactly the same as what someone else faces.
Yes.
It's the same things.
Yeah,
it's the same conversations.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just with different people.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite reassuring sometimes to actually hear that from someone else.
Yeah, definitely.
Is actually going through the same problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that might sound a bit masochistic, or
no,
but actually it's quite reassuring.
It does, yeah. I think it's that thing where, if you know somebody else is experiencing the same, you don't feel like you're just there on your own.
True.
You know, there's other people, and again, people have been through issues that you might be going through yourself, and they might be able to give you some tips and some guidance.
Cool. Yeah. So, Leamington Business Network, for anyone who doesn't know, runs. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's It's the second and final Thursday every month.
I'm so glad you said it, because I couldn't remember when it was. I knew it was a Thursday.
It's at Seasons Restaurant.
Perfect.
It starts at 7 o'clock.
Cool.
On a Thursday.
And Seasons Restaurant is along Warwick Street.
That's right.
In Leamington.
Yeah, in Leamington Spa.
For anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah.
Cracking. I miss me. I've been to it quite a few times. I like it there.
Yeah, it's a good little group.
Yeah, it's good.
Group. I mean, I try not to spread myself too thinly with networking. I mean, I'm obviously a member of your own very good group and the LBN. And I do go to a few off the cuff network meetings from time to time. But again, I think it's just getting that balance between going to overdoing it and spreading yourself too thinly, or just keeping your face in there, really, keeping your face there, so people, when a need comes along, your face pops into their mind.
Yeah, and I think that's the level that you're at in terms of your business, your networking kind of stature as well.
Certainly,
it makes sense for you just to kind of dip in and out of different places as well. Cool. We've come to the interview, part of the interview now, where I ask all my guests what their one golden nugget would be. So if you're going to just speak to one person and give them one bit of advice, what would it be?
I would say that my main nugget of information would be definitely to keep in touch with your clients that you've got. Keep them informed, because they do play a big part of your business going forward.
Yeah.
And if you've got happy clients, they're going to speak to other customers, and you're going to hopefully pick up work from your happy clients. So
you'll keep that core customer, because you're keeping that core customer,
certainly,
they're happy, they'll spread the word.
Yeah, I find that very, very important,
Brilliant. No, it's absolutely golden. So in terms of contact information, how would people find a little bit more information about you, contact you on social media, that kind of thing?
Okay, yeah, well, you can find us on the website, www.justice-roche, that's roche.com.
Cool.
You can email me directly, it's james@justice-roche.com. Got a phone number if you want it.
If you want to give it out.
Yeah, yeah. No problem. The office number, it's a Stratford number, but it actually comes to me in Warwick. It's 01789 33 20 91.
Yeah.
Or you can try 01789 33 20 92, and that will go to Jodie.
Got you.
We've got Twitter is at Justice Roach LTD, so you can get us on Twitter there. And we're also, I'm also on LinkedIn, so if you look under James Justice, Justice Roach on LinkedIn, I'm sure you'll find me.
Perfect. And is that your preferred platform, LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is one that I do tend to go to quite a bit, yeah. Yeah. I am ramping up my social media side a little bit now to try and do a little more on that side. So that's something which I have planned to sort of try and do more of this year. So, yep.
So check out the website, check out LinkedIn, check out Twitter, or good old fashioned, pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone, and give you a call.
Very nice one. It's been a pleasure, James, and we'll catch up with you again for the podcast, and we'll do a little bit more on that.
No problem at all.
Spot on. Cheers.
Cheers.
Now, security and backing up is really important if you've got loads of data. So this is James's podcast extra, talking all about how you can make your business, your hardware, your software, anything that you've got, more secure.
So in this podcast extra, we're going to be talking about how you can become more robust in your security, in terms of your websites, your apps, and that kind of thing. Is that about right? And your computer?
Yeah, and hardware as well, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah,
yeah. So what kind of main points do you want to cover? What's your top tips for cybersecurity?
Basically, these are things that I think we obviously have to implement ourselves quite stringently, being because we've got people's data on our sort of systems.
Yeah.
So over the years, I've become very mindful of security. So, I mean, the things I'm going to talk about here are all pretty much sort of common sense, really. I mean, but we all do very much rely on data these days. And, you know, if you turn a computer on and it doesn't boot up, what a horrible sinking feeling that is if you haven't got a backup.
Yeah, definitely.
So, some ideas. I mean, I think statistics say that 80% of businesses that have a major data breach probably go out of business within about 3 years. That's,
oh, wow.
Yeah, or lose a large amount of data internally. I think those are the stats. So
that's
it's
big.
It's quite big, yeah. So we're talking of simple things. I mean, you're obviously using it. Most people are using computers in the business. Make sure you've got that backed up. Make sure you've got a backup regime. There are simple packages. You know, on a Mac, you can use an Apple Mac. You can use Time Machine. On PCs, you can use packages by Acronis or by Windows that you can use. It's dead simple to set up a backup. Just back up to an external drive. So you know that your whole system's backed up in the event of a machine failure, and you need to reinstall. So that's peace of mind, basically. Any backups that you do, keep them away from your computer you're backing up from. Keep them somewhere else, because, you know, if you do get a fire or something happens, and you've got your backup and your computer together, and they're both burnt together, it's pointless having the backup.
True.
So make sure your backups are safe. I mean, my backups are stored externally. I do stick them in I've got a little fireproof safe.
Okay.
And they're hidden away in there, locked up. So.
And how often would you recommend someone backing up?
Well, me, I do it every day.
Okay.
And we've got Gary's laughing because, that's just me. I mean, it's just part of what I do. I'd like to say you should back up every day, but I mean, at the end of the day, it depends how much data you've got to lose. I mean, if you think that you could leave it once a week and you could perhaps reinstall from a week ago and get back to where you were again, you know, from memory and the bit that you haven't backed up, then that would probably be okay. But
it's just all about backing up and doing it in the frequency that you're happy with.
Yeah, and I think nowadays there's automated systems in place, so you don't actually have to think about the backup happening.
True.
So there's no real excuse to not back up.
Okay.
That's important.
Definitely. What's your next top tip?
Another top tip, you're using an email client to pick up your emails, which a lot of us do. I mean, I use Outlook. You get people having problems with Outlook from time to time because the actual file that sits behind Outlook gets too big and unwieldy. Because people tend to store all their attachments that they get. They don't remove them from the emails. Now, I'm not saying you have to do that, but I've always done that, and I've saved them somewhere else to try and keep my Outlook running more sweetly, because you can get issues with the Outlook file getting too large. And then it basically all crashes and burns.
Let's break it down into layman's, because I've got Outlook. I send a couple of kind of spreadsheets or presentations over. Then do I need to wipe it? Because I'll attach it as an attachment.
You'll attach it as an attachment, You'll send it.
Yep.
So in your sent items, that will still be attached to the email that you sent. So
you delete it off the sent.
So delete it off the sent. Obviously, you'll keep your original somewhere.
Yeah.
But delete it off the sent, because basically that's just sitting there building up, taking up space in your Outlook PST file.
Okay.
And every time more space is taken up with that, it takes longer for Windows to index the file, so it can make your Outlook start to run slower and slower. I mean, you need a couple of large JPEGs you've attached, sent to somebody, or a 2 meg one, a 3 meg one here, and you start looking at your file sizes, and it starts to get huge. So it's worth keeping in mind, get into the habit of that, and I also do it with emails that I've received, because of course when you've received them, you've still got the attachments there.
True.
So I tend to save them down to my desktop, put them into a project folder, and then I remove them from the email.
That's a great top tip.
Yeah,
love that. Have you got another one?
Yes. Uninterruptible power supply could be worthwhile. I mean, if you're using a laptop, it's not such a big issue because your power goes when you're halfway through doing something, and your laptop's hopefully going to have enough battery power
to keep it going,
keep you going while you safely shut down.
Yeah.
But if you're using a desktop solution, you can get an uninterruptible power supply cheap now for Maplin's, 150 quid. Probably keep your computer going for 10 minutes if you had a power cut, which gives you enough time to save things safely, and to carry on work when the power comes back again. Because often you get file corruptions if a computer dies, crashes, isn't shut down properly, basically, which you get if you get a power outage. So, yeah, if you want to keep your file corruptions down to a minimum, for one of those, it's worth having.
That's brilliant. Yeah. So, just to recap, just your one-liner, so what's your first top tip?
Yep. Make sure you do your backups regularly. Keep them away from your main computer, so that in case of fire or burglary or theft, the two things don't get taken at the same time or damaged at the same time.
Brilliant. Top tip number two.
Number two, with your Outlook, try and remove your attachments that you get sent or you send out, to try and keep your file sizes down to make your Outlook package run more sweetly.
Perfect. And your top tip number three
is invest in an uninterruptible power supply.
Nice.
To keep your computer going in case of a or your desktop computer going in case of a power outage, so that again you don't get corruptions in files when the system is shut down incorrectly from a power outage.
Yeah, that is absolutely golden. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, James. And as I said in the intro, this is laced with golden nuggets. So check it out. Again, if you're not too sure, share it with people who you think it might be worthwhile to, because James knows his stuff, and you can't be in business for as long as he has and keep all of your customers at the start. It's crazy. So thank you, James, for spending the time talking to us, and I hope this has helped you and your business. Now, James is also part of my networking group called the Leamington Hour Networkers, who meet up once a month in different locations in and around Leamington and also in Coventry. So if you want to join us, I would love to see you there. Have a great week, everyone, and take care.